Light the beam, because it's time for Nerdy for 30, the podcast where we talk about nerdy-ish movies for 30-ish minutes. My name is Kevin Bauer, a.k.a. The Critic's Choice. With me, as always, the people's champ, Tim Keck. And today is a banner day for the pod, because we get to talk about X-Men 2.
Dude, I love this movie. I love the first one. This movie is so cool, and God, it's awesome. Dude, as soon as I finished this movie, I was like, I could watch 8 more of these.
Yeah. Like,
just keep them coming. I wanted to stop. I think maybe our plan, we'll see how good this one does, but I think our plan is to do a bunch of these X-Men movies this year, and I want to save them for when we're going to pod, but dude, I could sit down and crush all these like right now. I love spending time with the characters. I love hanging out with these guys. Hugh Jackman is S-tier casting. It's Hugh Jackman, Robert Downey Jr., and everybody else. Robert Downey Jr. is Iron Man. They're so far above in everything else, in anything else. It's crazy. And that's in like a movie with already insane casting with Xavier and Magneto. I love this movie. It's so good, Kevin. And it starts white hot off the bat with that opening scene in Nightcrawler. My God, that's one of the coolest. That's one of the coolest openings to a movie ever, I think. It's such an incredible scene.
No question. The first movie, we just ranted and raved in our pod about the first movie, about how cool everything was. This movie managed to start with something that was cooler than anything we'd seen in the first one. It's kind of incredible to me watching back through to see how limited the scope was when these began. I was shocked by the fact that there were just 4 X people in the first movie. And then in this one, we're seeing Nightcrawler, but the powers that we've seen are not that crazy. Like, his is definitely the craziest power we've seen so far, right? Because first movie we had, Storm, Jean Grey, powers don't really look like she's doing anything. Cyclops, great. On the villain side, Mystique, extremely cool. Still one of the coolest effects. Like, unreal how awesome that all looks. Toad, pretty much a guy with a long tongue.
Yeah.
Sabretooth, big guy.
Harry.
And am I missing anybody? I don't think I am. I think that's it for the first movie.
Rogue.
Magneto. I mean, Rogue, yeah. Which, you know, whatever. But like, Nightcrawler.
She touches people and they get tired.
Nightcrawler?
Nightcrawler is so badass in this scene. And just poofing around, disappearing. I mean, I feel like I could talk about this scene forever. He's in white face, which is fascinating. He's in like a trench coat and white face. And otherwise is just a straight up demon with 2 fingers walking around. And then there's a shot of him with his head down in front of the JFK painting. Whoever JFK has his head down. And then he disappears. And he's not trying to hurt anybody. He like disarms guys. He uses his tail to throw guns away. Like, he is clearly on a mission. But this is also a guy who could just poof in, kill the president, and just be gone. But it is clearly a demonstration. And as you go on with the movie, it's like, oh, yeah, this is a statement. And you kind of, in hindsight, look at that first scene and go, oh, this was a statement. This was a presentation. This was intentionally flashy to stir up like criticism of mutants. What do you think of Nightcrawler in general as a character? Because I like him. You know, he's like in the second wave of X-Men. He's as a person, he's fascinating in the circus and very interesting. And he's like into acting and all that stuff. And he's like a Catholic, but he looks like a demon. There's a lot going on there. His powers feel so limited, especially like in the modern X-Men or like modern comic books. Teleporting seems like a pretty easy thing to do. And he has so many limitations on his power that it felt a little lame to me in the comic books at the time, where like he can only teleport like a couple miles. He can't really bring anybody with him. I remember like the first time seeing him in X-Men, they locked him in a room and with no windows, and he couldn't see where he was going, so he couldn't get out of the room. And his solution was to teleport 3 miles straight up into the air and hope he didn't hit anything, which is a pretty good thing. And so, but that is so much more interesting than a guy who can just teleport, right? If you can just close your eyes and teleport anywhere with anything, it's less compelling. Him having to deal with these things and in this movie teleport through this like locked door. It's simultaneously like such a small kind of lame power, but also so much more interesting because of it. Like the flaws are what make it interesting. I don't know. Where do you think of Nightcrawler? Because I don't think he's in like the top tier of X-Men ever.
I mean, no, I definitely don't think he's in the top tier, but I do think it's like you said, it's that theory of X-Men of it takes a couple of X-Men to equal one Thor is fascinating. Yeah. It's what's so cool about them is the teamwork should be essential to what they're doing. I always had a soft spot for Nightcrawler. It was mostly fostered by this movie. I also had, I mean, and the cartoon X-Men Evolution, which I adored when I was younger.
He was great in that. Yeah.
He was super fun in that.
But not in the 90s cartoon.
No, 90s cartoon kind of hit and miss. His character was okay in the video game. It was like his special power was fine, but like the rest of the time it kind of sucked. I've always thought he looked cool. And I had the Heroclix. Did you fuck with Heroclix at all when you were a kid?
No.
Oh, dude. It was like he was the holographic Charizard first edition of Heroclix. It is the only time it was blind box, so you don't know what ones you're getting. It's the only time I've had like a blind box packaging, and I've gotten the absolute best one you can get. I got a Nightcrawler. I was in the backseat of my dad's truck. My jaw dropped. I couldn't talk. I was so excited. So I feel like also from that, I've had this like really this nostalgic feeling toward him. I think Alan Cumming's really good. I think that this version of Nightcrawler is still probably the coolest version, or like when they do any of these castings well, and when they characterize these movies on screen really well, screenwriters are really good at like distilling an idea for these characters. And I think that they did an incredible job of distilling Nightcrawler for this movie.
Yeah, I think they really did. And at least knowing how he's not in the rest of the franchise, basically.
Yeah.
It's a bummer we don't get more of Alan Cumming's Nightcrawler.
Yeah, where did he go? I was Googling that today.
I think from what I understood with X3, they basically made a choice between him and Beast with the idea that they're not going to spend all this. I mean, they're doing practical effects like real paint and makeup.
Sure.
And they're not going to put two people in the chair for that. I mean, it's too expensive to do Beast and Nightcrawler. And I think for what they're doing in X3, especially, Beast makes more sense for that story. Mm-hmm. But it is a bum. I mean, Alan Cummings is also great cast. I mean, he's like a theater. He's a theater guy. It would be great to see him bring that like theatricality.
Theocracy.
Yeah. If he could bring Iron Fist to Nightcrawler and really exert his power over everyone below him. It would be great to see him explore that a little bit and lean into the character. And there's moments when he's having fun, like when he waves at the president, it's like at the end and the president's scared. And then he kind of reacts, like kind of like puts his hand over his mouth a little bit. He's so in tune to like the little movements of this guy. And it's a bummer we don't get to see more of it.
I think a nice way to dovetail into this conversation. So the first movie really felt like the commentary. Obviously, X-Men are intrinsically tied to civil rights movements. The first movie felt like it was pretty clearly mapped onto Malcolm X and Martin Luther King, right? And like the civil rights movement in the 1960s. This movie, I got the vibe. I wanted to see if you felt the same way. I got the vibe that this movie was a lot more tied to homosexuality and like the cis population's relationship to LGBTQ+ people, where like, I mean, right down to the line, I think the key line for me that illustrated this was the fact that it's the have you tried not being a mutant?
Yes.
So like, there you go, right there. You would never get that with just, you know, nobody's going to ask that to a person of color. But then also like smaller things, when we see inside of Jason's mind, he portrays himself as a young girl. And maybe I'm reading too much into it, but I was like, is this a trans allegory? Like, is the thing that William Stryker brought his son to Professor Xavier to basically pray the gay away?
And like, that's really good. I don't think I've thought of that with him being a girl in his visions. Like he sees himself as a girl and it's like he's seeking help. It's great. I mean, I think you're 100% right. I mean, the director, Bryan Singer, is like a white gay man. So I think that story resonated with him more than maybe like a racial story would. And I think they definitely lean into that. And I think it's great. And I mean, those scenes are pretty powerful, I think. And I think as a kid, you're not really understanding all the context of this. But the scene with Bobby and his parents, I remember being like, it was a really great scene.
Yeah. You know? It's incredible. It's a great way to get people who otherwise wouldn't, if you were presenting them with like a straight up and down, like this is a story about gay rights, they wouldn't necessarily be able to empathize in the same way as when you give it to them as mutants. It's why the X-Men are the perfect sugar pill for this kind of stuff. It's like you wrap it in this layer of special effects and suddenly people are like more open-minded than they would be.
I mean, and his family kind of reacts in like all the different ways that they could react. And even watching Pyro react to Iceman's parents reacting to him is so interesting because Pyro, I feel like it's implied that Pyro does not have a family like that.
Yeah.
Like does not have a loving family at home and is kind of orphaned or just on the run or does not have a stable home to go back to. So I think he's simultaneously jealous of Iceman and then also upset that this like family that I'm projecting more with this, but I'm imagining Pyro views Iceman as like a privilege, like, oh, you got that sweet family and your frame photos on the wall. And I didn't have any of that. And then seeing that kind of shatter in front of him with prejudice, I think is also a fascinating reaction. And then he goes outside and blows up a bunch of cars. After a cop just shoots Wolverine in the head, which is an insane. Oh, we can add it to the list of old fashioned cop reactions. Like, yeah. That is so insane that a guy has knives. And even if he has knives and they're 20 feet away from you, I don't know. A bullet in the head probably isn't the best way to deal with it. But I did all I really want to talk about that scene with Xavier and Jason, too. Because I think you made a great point with the idea of Jason seeing himself as somebody else. The thing that really stood out to me on this rewatch is Professor X plugged into Cerebro and Brian Cox, William Stryker, who is crushing it, by the way.
Oh,
Brian
yeah.
Cox, so good. So good in this. Incredible. And he gets Jason, his own son, that he's mutilated because Jason drove his wife insane and got her to kill herself. I mean, this story is like complicated and dark. Everyone is it's crazy how like a lot of the characters just have like insanely dark and brutal pasts. And this is still just like a kid's movie and you're just like hanging out. But like this rewatch, I was really thinking about the idea of conceiving a child and then that child hurts the person you love the most in the world. And is a thing that you don't understand and only see as a weapon, and how you would have to like psychologically distance yourself from this thing that's a part of you to mutilate it and use it to exterminate anything that reminds you of your son is crazy and horrible. That's like so complicated and such a juicy background to explore. I mean, it's so much character right there. And so Jason is sent to brainwash Professor X basically and convince Professor X to find all the mutants and kill them all. And so Jason is trying to hack into Professor X's brain, and the first way that he tries to hack into Professor X's brain is a scene where Professor X is standing. And he's in the mansion and he's standing on his feet, and Professor Xavier looks down at his feet and a tear rolls down his face, and he looks up and then he shakes it off and he's like, no, this isn't real. This isn't real. And so then Jason tries again, and his strategy this time, instead of giving Professor X a thing that he wants for himself, he gives Professor X an opportunity to help someone else in a child who is lost and scared and needs to find everybody. And I think that's the kind of thing that's like incredible character work. It's so they're not beating you over the head with it, but it really just flushes out who Professor X is as a character. And as Jason, it just kind of shows like the process into breaking into this man's mind and manipulating him into do stuff. I thought that was so cool.
Dude, it was nuts. I noticed the same thing. It tells you right there that they really truly understand Professor X when they're writing this. Like, it's amazing. I've talked about this a lot, but like comics writers don't, I feel like the nature of the industry and what they're trying to do, they're kind of shooting from the hip a lot more. And there's like a higher churn rate. They got to come up with a lot of ideas. They got to write a lot of stuff, and it all goes out there not that long after they write it. Obviously, like the Hollywood machine is very, very different. But for adaptations like this, the fact that they do have to take so much source material and they're able to draw from just the parts of it they really like that fit this one story and like this one idea, it's amazing what comes out of that. Because it ends up being, I really do feel like it ends up being this crystallized version of the character that then can go back and influence the comics again. Like, I feel like it's kind of, for the X-Men comics specifically, these were hitting right around the same time that Marvel was relaunching this line of comics called the Ultimate Comics, where they were trying to shake off decades of continuity and create a point, a new jumping on point for readers where they could come on and they wouldn't be burdened by something that happened in the 70s that they have no idea about. So I feel like these movies hit at a perfect point where it's kind of like when the comics industry needed to stop to catch its breath, this came back and captured everybody's attention, but then became this launching point for everything to come off of again. And it's so cool that, like, I don't know, it's so cool what they've done. I love Professor X as a character so much. Everything they did with him in the future movies too, with like Matthew Vaughn and James McAvoy, I thought it still harkens back and stays true to this version of the character. And man, we talked about this in the first pod too, but Patrick Stewart, Ian McKellen, those are S-tier castings right there. Those are right up there with Downey Jr. and Hugh Jackman.
Incredible. And they have incredible chemistry together too.
Oh, they sure do.
It's so good. I was reading this Batman comic the other day, and I saw this quote from Batman that was something like him talking about Superman. And basically saying, you know, deep down, he's a good person and deep down I'm not, which is kind of showing how Batman views himself. Mm. But then also I saw something, I guess I was in like a deep dive on Batman, and somebody else who'd written Batman said, if your Batman character can't like comfort a child in need, then it's not Batman.
Interesting.
And the idea of both of those things existing simultaneously in a character was very interesting to me. How Batman views himself as a bad person, but also, I mean, he's doing it for his orphan self, but then also other children. He makes priorities. And I remember there's like a great Justice League Unlimited with Batman where he like comforts this character, like this child as she's dying. And Batman is a character that has a lot of heart, but then ultimately does things with maybe not the best methods. And I was trying to map that onto like the Charles Xavier Magneto thing, where we see Magneto, who's like the villain of this and continuously does bad things and is a, you know, evil things. He's locked in like this glass prison, which, oh my God, I can't believe we haven't even talked about the prison scene with Magneto.
No, dude.
When he rips the iron out of that guy and escapes from the prison with three ball bearings. That's one of the coolest. That's the equivalent of the Nightcrawler scene for me. Nightcrawler, like the ball bearings is Magneto's like big scene, ripping the iron out of this guy and escaping.
She just straight up injects iron into this guy. Like, they show the syringe is metallic. Like, this is at best molten iron. I don't know how the hell this man didn't just die.
I'm also like, do you need to find a vein? Like, what? Or it's just, where does this iron go? You know, is it in the bloodstream already? Or is it just like a chunk of iron just floating around in his butt? Like, no, it's funny that it sets off the metal detector.
He's just got a hunk of iron in his ass. Doesn't know what it is.
If Magneto just pulled it out of his ass, just like one solid chunk, just ripped it out of his skin. But man, it's so cool. But Magneto in this is tortured. before that. And we know that he was a child and his family was taken in the Holocaust and he was in Auschwitz. And we are now seeing him as a grown man locked in a cell and beaten and tortured and abused in a way that is like, with his history, I feel like that's kind of shocking to see. And he ends up giving up information about Professor Xavier and the mutants. And then Professor Xavier goes to see him and Magneto's trying to be really cocky to him. But then I think has like a genuine moment of like breaking down, like I'm sorry. Like I fucked up, you know, like I betrayed you guys and I wouldn't ever do that. So it is fascinating to be like, there's a character out there who will kill every human on the planet, but he would battle the X-Men to do it.
Yeah.
But he wouldn't rat them out to the government.
Nope.
Because and it's such an interesting morality line with Magneto that makes him a perpetually fascinating character for me.
Oh, big time. At the end of the day, he holds this respect for them. And even though he doesn't agree with what they're doing, he still has that respect for them that governs everything that he does. And oh my God, they don't do anything in these movies without reason. Like when they're showing that Magneto is doing these quote unquote evil things, when he's doing these things that break laws, it's completely understandable why he is doing those things based on his backstory. Like everything that he is doing is reactive to something that somebody else is doing. And I mean that in a positive way. I don't know if that's always used in a positive connotation, but like everything that happens to him and has happened to him, he is reacting to it in real time based on the beliefs that have been created by the things that happen to him. It's amazing. He's like going through the world as this fully fleshed out character that has this backstory that's so tragic and informs everything about him. Man, these are fucking Shakespeare, dude. This is geek Shakespeare.
I mean, they're really good. I mean, Professor X has an ideal view of the world. But we, as we see in future movies too, Professor Xavier had an ideal kind of life. He's very privileged. This is his mansion that everyone's staying in. He's loaded, you know, like he has kind of everything going for him in life. And then we see Magneto, who's literally seen the worst that humanity has to offer. And those origins influence their worldviews like perpetually going forward, especially in the movies. And knowing that, like, I can't say either of them is wrong. You know, like, I get it. I get the why. Whether or not I agree with what they're actually trying to do is another thing. But the why makes complete sense to me for them.
Yeah, it's awesome. I want to ask you this. What do you think about this exact kind of like ideology conversation we're having? Feels like a big distinguishing factor between the first movie and the second movie. Did you think that this movie's action scenes made it more of a traditional like action movie and less of like an overall film? Do you know what I mean? So I feel like we got action sequences in the first movie, but I felt like they were still always pretty serviceable, or like they were always in service to the larger themes at work. Where this one, I feel like I had to kind of work harder to pick apart the specific themes because these, albeit incredible, action scenes were going on.
Well, I mean, I think that's what's great to me about these movies and like this like specific genre of stuff is we're really nitpicking these, and it's because I think we've both seen them a million times.
Yeah.
And we just finished talking about Dune and we're probably in like a little bit of a philosophical mindset right now. So these are just action movies. These are just superhero movies. They just made some cool, fun superhero movies. And this is a great sequel. The first one is them all coming together and working as a group. And this one is like, we're cranking that up and we're splitting everybody up and everybody has their own thing and their own journey to worry about. And it just, it makes sense. They're showing us more of the things that we like. We get more eye candy, which is an amazing thing that like, I mean, it's kind of a problem I have with, maybe some future X-Men movies is like part of this is supposed to be fun. Like I want to see Colossus. I want to see Jubilee. I want to see Kitty Pryde. I want to see all these little snippets of people that I can pretend are like other characters that we'll see again. I mean, all the scenes with the school and what's going on there, the introduction of Pyro, all of these things are fun to see and like comic booky and exciting. And it's what made the X-Men fun, was there were always characters coming in and out, and like anyone can be a mutant. So there's always new people interacting and joining the team and helping for a little bit, and like different combinations of people. This is just like a fun, great movie. And then in the, just like a fun, awesome action movie with superheroes and people in costumes. And then it also has all of these themes. Mm-hmm. And I think that's great. And I don't think they're mutually exclusive. I think if you don't agree with any of the stuff we've said theme wise, you can just enjoy this as just a fun action movie. I mean, that's what it is. I think first and foremost, it's a fun action movie. And like with a lot of the X-Men stuff, you kind of absorb the rest of it as like osmosis, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. So do you think overall X-Men 2 is a better movie to you than X-Men 1?
I think X-Men 1's a better movie. If we're just going with like better movie, I think it's X-Men 1. I think X-Men 2 is close, but under it. And then if we do X3, I think that's a piece of shit and I might love it the most. Like, so it depends what our...
I don't know why I wasn't expecting the addendum on that. You think X-Men The Last... Like, you love X-Men The Last Stand the most, do you think?
I think I rewatched it the most because it's just got the most stuff. Like, as a kid, man. It's like... I mean, part of watching these movies is seeing the thing... Because I was a Marvel guy, mm-hmm. you know? I had all these comics. When my great-grandma died, my dad went to go, like, settle her estate, and then he brought back these, like... bins of his Marvel comics that like he had like the first ever Uncanny X-Men, which of course was worth nothing because my uncle colored in it as a kid and the pages were ripped, and I'm just like, God, you children couldn't take better care of this so your son could sell it for $5,000 in the future. Ridiculous. So I loved all these characters, and it was like Nightcrawler being in this was crazy. It was so exciting to see Nightcrawler. And then the third one is also like just so much more other stuff and different things. And it's like bright and flashy and there's more to dissect. And ultimately, I think it's a pretty bad movie, but it's fun to see Angel. It's fun to see all these things. We're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit, but it's one of the beefs I have with Logan, which is probably considered the best of all of these, that the villain in that one, spoiler alert, is Wolverine. And I think it's a little boring and a little antithetical to these superheroes where we want to see cool new things and new flashy stuff, like Lady Deathstrike. It's weird. It's not really the Lady Deathstrike character, but I'm here for it. And I think maybe that's the problem, is that Wolverine has constantly been presented with foils of himself and people that reflect aspects of him back to him that are original and different from himself. That after a while, the point of him fighting a clone of himself, I think, is like a little on the nose.
Yeah.
You know, isn't fighting Sabretooth like fighting a clone of himself? Isn't fighting Lady Deathstrike like a clone of Wolverine? So now it's just actually a younger version of Wolverine. Like, I don't know. Can it be a different person? We're getting off topic. But speaking of chemistry, I did want to mention this.
Yeah.
I think they go out of their way to keep Wolverine and Storm separate, because Hugh Jackman and Halle Berry's chemistry is just ridiculous. You know, he walks into the mansion, Halle Berry's coming down the stairs, and I was like, whoa, this is happening. You know, this is crazy. And then it's like Jean Grey comes in, and it's not that like Jansen isn't like a good actor or whatever, and her and Wolverine have chemistry, but they really are like throwing everything at her with like, she's coming down the she gets her like rom-com entrance and they lock eyes and it's like, oh, Jean. Whereas like Hugh Jackman and Halle Berry just have effortless, like best friends, like that couple that like, you know, they're always together and they're just always going on adventures together. And like, everyone's a little bit jealous of how well they get along. Like that could have been, you know, like Jean Grey is a fling, but like Halle Berry, Storm and Wolverine is for real, man.
Yeah, dude, it's forever. Isn't there one of these movies where it kind of insinuates that they've been together? Is it, I can't remember if it's the end of Days of Future Past or if it's maybe, I don't think it's Last Stand. I haven't seen Last Stand in a long time. I felt like there was one of them where they kind of hinted that maybe they were together. Or at least have been together, or maybe I'm just reading this chemistry. You're not imagining it. It's real. It's incredible. Halle Berry and Hugh Jackman.
It's great. Maybe I mean, they're great happened. In Swordfish. They're great in this. And it was a thing in the comics, too. And I feel like their energy lines up with the comics where it's like Jean Grey is like the love of his life and he's in this weird throuple. But Storm is like a very good friend. Mm. And, you know, if you're both that hot and you're great friends, why not? You know,
it makes sense.
There's
too,
worse ways to spend your time.
Yeah. She's connected to nature. He's like a wolf. Like they have like a wolf howl in the beginning of this movie. And you feel like maybe he understood what it said. Maybe he didn't understand the actual words, but the spirit he definitely understood.
Yeah. They're both, I mean, they are both very similar in a lot of ways. They're both kind of like outcasts from their, like, they're both very naturalistic. He's animalistic and she's like all about weather and storms and plants, I guess. And they just, their chemistry is effortless.
Dude, I love a throuple, like, I don't know, what do you call it? Love triangle? A love triangle between Storm, Wolverine, and Black Panther would be hysterical. Because I get the feeling Black Panther would just be having absolutely none of that. There, if anybody doesn't know, Storm and Black Panther were married for a long time in the comics.
Yeah. Yeah, they were a big couple. And now there is a throuple, I guess. And they like live together with Jean Grey and Iceman and Cyclops. It's wild to me at the end of the movie, after Jean Grey dies, that Wolverine says to Cyclops, she chose you.
Yeah.
And it's like, but as Cyclops, it's like, yeah, you know, the girl that I live with and like trusted explicitly, she chose me. What do you mean she chose me? She's been choosing me every day, man. What do you think this is?
The girl that I was with, where this wasn't even a problem until you showed up. Thanks for reassuring me, man. Really, really means a ton coming from you.
It makes me think, like, was Cyclops ever viewing Wolverine as like a real threat, like in that way? I don't know.
Maybe, I mean, I think so. They kind of hinted that, but I do like that read more where it's the Mad Men thing of like, I don't think about you at all.
Yeah. Gosh, that's what Cyclops should have done. Man. Anything else we're missing out on? Any rapid fire takes?
I had one question for you.
Still a useless X-Men, I think.
Ooh, Rogue?
Just you. I mean, useless power.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of a bummer. And it was also a bummer in this that we don't get to see Iceman do his thing, which I'm excited to see happen.
Same. There was a cool take on Rogue in this comic series for a while that I liked called Extreme X-Men, which I'm pretty sure she just had a stockpile of all the powers that she had used previously, if I'm remembering right. So she could just call up anybody that she touched, which was a pretty cool take, but also way fucking overpowered, like insanely overpowered.
Like heroes.
Yeah, except she didn't even have to eat the brain. If you're going to do that, you at least got to eat the brain.
Well, they had that season. They had like the bad guy ate brains and got their powers. And then the other guy just had to be friends with him. And then they nerfed him immediately.
Insane.
They're like, we've got a guy who can travel anywhere in time and space. Oh, man, we got to nerf him right away.
Yeah. Jesus. Only other question I had for you. I have a couple. I'll split this up. I'll lead with this one and I'll save the next one for the last stand. Did you have a favorite X-Men, favorite X person in the books? Who was your favorite X person?
I really liked, I mean, once Wolverine showed up, obviously I really liked him.
Yeah.
Colossus, I feel like was a big deal in that second run. In the originals, man, who was my favorite then? I think I liked Bobby the Iceman the best because he was like kind of goofing off and fun.
He was the Michelangelo of the group.
Yeah, I'm kind of it is like the weird thing, like you said, with the first movie where it's like there's just like five of them. Like the original X-Men is like kind of a lame group. Yeah. It's Cyclops, Jean Grey, who's like kind of not really strong, Beast, who's like just a guy who jumps, and then Iceman, who has ice powers. And then a guy with wings. Mm-hmm. And it's like kind of really kind of a pretty lame group. And they all get like kind of upgraded as the series goes on. But man, yeah, I remember being very invested in them. And I guess I'm not 100% sure why. But I guess part of it, too, for me was never, it's never been about the individuals. It's been about the group.
Yeah.
And I'm not interested in like a Wolverine solo comic. I want to see Wolverine interacting with somebody else. And those like the groups is what I loved. The Avengers, X-Men. I want the group together.
I'm right there.
What about you? Do you have an individual that stands out to you, or like of the group in this movie? Who's your favorite? Who would be your favorite character out of this?
Of the group in this movie, I think in this movie, my favorite was Nightcrawler when it came out. Mm. Always been a big Colossus guy.
Colossus is great.
Colossus is so sick. Just really cool. And then we get to a point in the comics where there's this one comic with Cyclops where I had always found Cyclops to be an extremely lame character. And then there's this really brief, like maybe 6 or 7 issue run that happens with him where it's like, hands down, he is the coolest motherfucker on earth. Oh my God, I cannot believe how cool this was. And then they immediately like draw that to a close so that he can go back to being very lame. But
yeah, I mean, he's Captain America Light. He's like the Boy Scout, right? Mm-hmm. They always say. And then, I mean, in the comics, he got his ass kicked in a hand-to-hand fight with Storm.
Yeah. Yeah, no powers fight.
Yeah, which is weird because his whole thing is like hand-to-hand combat, and she doesn't need to do that because she controls storms. Also, I thought it was so funny in this when they're flying the jet and trying to escape from like the fighter jets.
Yeah.
And Storm just like calls like a million tornadoes and they're like ripping these things out of the sky. And I was like, there's light. She like makes this incredible storm while flying the jet. And then they shoot 2 missiles at him. Jean Grey disarms one of them. And then the other one hits them. It explodes. They crash. And Wolverine goes to her after and is like, some display of power up there. And I'm like, this guy is trying to get in her pants for sure. Because there's no way he stepped over the woman that made 20 tornadoes to get to the woman who disarmed like one bomb. Give me a break. What are we talking about? It's such a insane power jump to go from disarming one bomb to like stopping Nightcrawler from teleporting, stopping the giant wave, taking the plane to like take off. It's such an absurd jump, and also be communicating with Professor X. The Phoenix stuff is wild in this.
It's weird,
but great. And it was exciting.
We got to close it out. Thank you so much for listening. This has been Nerdy for 30. Send us an email, nerdy430@gmail.com. Come back, check it out next week. I think we're going to be doing the action movie draft, which is going to be a fun thing to try out.
Yes, we will.
Yeah. Thanks for listening, everybody. Bye.
Thanks for listening. Bye.
If we might run out of time, but I do want to bring up how funny it is that Gene